how do I find mold in my own house? And I'm going to walk through some of these things with you that are pretty important for us to understand. We have to deal with some of the beliefs that we've come to have about our homes and about our health first. And so in order to understand the question, we have to ask another question. We have to ask, why is the mold there in the first place? Where is the mold? How did it get there? You are listening to the Manage Mold Podcast. This podcast was made for families on a health journey that need the real, no holds barred answers on how to create and ensure a healthy home. This show should be your launching pad to give you the information, guidance, and inspiration and clarity you need on your journey back to a healthy home. My name is Dean Malstead. You can find and follow me on Facebook and LinkedIn. Welcome to Manage Mold. All right. Hey, everybody. This is the Manage Mold Podcast. This is episode number 2. In episode number 2, we are going to deal with one of the primary questions that we are continually asked. How do I find mold in my own house? Sometimes it's a commercial building, but oftentimes it's the house. We're going to deal with that today. Just a little recap. On episode number 1, I shared our family's story. My name is Dean Malstead, for anyone who doesn't know. And I shared the Malstead story in episode number 1 about a 20-year period of time where in the midst of that, we found some mold in our house. We found some Lyme disease in our bodies and some mold toxicity issues. And we ended up doing some major work on both home and body. And so we cover a little bit of that in episode 1. So we're going to expand on that going into this question today, episode number 2. How do I find mold in my own house? There's a lot of do-it-yourselfers out there. There's also a lot of us who have struggled and strained to find quality and competent professionals to help us. And over again, we are shared stories from people that we work with about all the disappointments they have with some of the professionals, with some of the disorder, with some of the opinions and varied opinions and the many varied approaches of how to investigate and then how to remediate. And part of this podcast is actually to help you be the hero of your own story. And we want to guide you with so much of the information that we've learned over the last 7 or 8 years, going through this the hard way ourselves, having been a remediation professional in our own company, and doing the work and learning a whole bunch of stuff that we thought we knew, that we now know better, and then dealing with it personally as a family, both with health and finances and how all that works out. So let's jump into this. So we're going to deal with this question, how do I find mold in my own house? And I'm going to walk through some of these things with you that are pretty important for us to understand. We have to deal with some of the beliefs that we've come to have about our homes and about our health first. And so in order to understand the question, we have to ask another question. We have to ask, why is the mold there in the first place? Where is the mold? How did it get there? So the first thing, and one of the things that we hear oftentimes, especially from the naysayers, but from most people, especially in homes that are very well kept, are seemingly nicely built, and from all appearances have no problems, is this. Well, I have to be able to see the mold in order for it to be a problem, which actually is completely not true. In fact, most of the homes that we investigate actually don't have visible mold. The mold is actually hiding in an assembly. And so with that, the mold has to be seen to be a problem. There's a problem with that. So mold will grow and thrives in building assemblies and in non-conditioned spaces in a home. That means in your walls, crawl spaces, under floating floors. It can be in places like attics, depending on what part of the country you're in, and all those can be a problem. Second, mold is very small. I mean, really small. If we consider the human hair average diameter of the human hair is 70 microns. And if we figure that the normal human eye sees down to approximately 40 microns, just a little bit smaller than a human hair, we have a problem. Because mold spores, many of them, land in the range between 1 and 20 microns. So that is smaller than what the human eye can see. And if we put that into a little bit different perspective, think about it this way. If mold is 1 to 20 microns in diameter, it takes 25,000 microns to make 1 inch. Okay? Everyone get out your rulers, your measuring tapes, or what have you, and look at how big 1 inch is. And stack 25,000 1-micrometer mold spores together, and that makes you 1 inch. I've heard it said that for those of us who remember the old number 2 lead pencil with the pink eraser, that eraser composes probably a million spores. In 1 cubic foot of air, when we talk about total particles that might be in the air, I'm not talking about mold necessarily. I'm talking about total particles that cannot be seen by the human eye in a cubic foot of air at any given point could number around 400 million unseen particles. Again, that isn't necessarily mold. I'm just talking about everything that we are walking through or sitting in, the things that we don't see that are in the air could be that many. Okay, so mold has to be seen to be a problem, some people will say. And I will tell you from experience and then from measuring, in many homes, that is actually not true. Once you remove some layers of your home, maybe some drywall in a couple of areas, you might then see the mold. But we have actually been on projects that we have inspected, we've measured, and then we've been part of the remediation process. And it's very difficult to actually see any kind of layer or any kind of growth of mold. But when you test it, it's all over the surface of the things that we take apart. So that's item number one. Item number two, water damage. How many people really understand what water damage is and that mold needs fuel in order to grow? Water is fuel. So we fail to consider all the possibilities when we think about, does mold exist in my home? So there are a number of things on a list that could cause mold to grow in the home, and we need to think about them. Here's a short list. We forget to consider the water damage of these possible things. Most of us think about flooding. We think about hurricanes. We think about big rainstorms. We think about rapid snowmelt, all kinds of different factors where we think about liquid water pooling up in our home somehow, maybe an open window. Well, flooding is one of those things that can cause mold damage if the building is not taken care of or repaired after that flood. However, flooding is not the only thing. In fact, in the 21 years of owning ProCare, we've done water damage restoration for 35 years. We would estimate that 90% of the homes that we do water damage work in, where we go in, we take apart part of the home that's wet and we dry out the remaining portions and then put them back together. We estimate that 90% of our jobs actually come from plumbing issues, not from weather-related or flooding issues. Okay? So that's there. You got to think about that. I need you to also understand this. Water, most of us think about it as a liquid. And while that's true, water is a liquid, one of the bigger causes of mold damage that we see in our area is water vapor. High relative humidity, water vapor, condensation, however you want to look at it. We have water that is actually a gas or in the gaseous state. And when you have too much water vapor in an area, you can create conditions that are perfect for mold to grow. It is a perfect fuel when it's there in the right amount. Okay? Many sources of excess water in our home include these. At the exterior of our home, most people don't think about how their lawn is sloped towards or away from their home. They don't think about caulk joints around their windows or flashing out their chimneys or at different roof lines. We don't think about our attic spaces sometimes. Some parts of the country have bigger issues with moisture in their attics than other places in the country. Rooms with plumbing on the inside. Anytime that we go into a home and we're investigating, anytime that you're walking through your home, think about those rooms that have plumbing. And then think about the rooms that are immediately adjacent to those rooms that have plumbing. And that usually encompasses quite a bit of the house right there. Okay. Then basements. Basements are not found in all parts of the country. We realize that. But in the parts of the country that they are found, finished basements especially, but all basements ordinarily can have problems with high moisture and with mold contamination. So the other interesting thing about basements I'll note here is we get into situations often around us where the soils are varied. They range from very sandy soil to very heavy soil. And all of my sandy soil dwellers always claim when I show up on their doorstep that, oh, our house is built on the sand and thus we can't have any foundation problems or water problems because of the sand. And that's actually not true also. Sand allows water, which is liquid and vapor, to move rapidly and to cause it to be and build a hydraulic type of pressure, a vapor pressure, even if there isn't liquid water present, against the foundation floor or the foundation walls, and still make a home in sandy soil, wet at its foundation. And then finally, the last thing I'll cover here in this short list is crawl spaces. It doesn't seem to matter where in the country that we have crawl spaces, it seems as though we have issues with excess moisture. And if you have a crawl space that has open soil and it does not have a membrane that blocks water, liquid, and vapor from coming up into that crawl space, you likely have a high moisture problem in most cases. Maybe not all, and maybe you don't have mold in all cases, but in many cases you do. So the third item with how do I find mold in my home that we might not think too much about is because we're looking for it, we want to visibly see it, is mold needs a food source. So mold needs fuel, it needs water in order to grow, but it also needs something to eat. And so here are a few of the major sources that cause mold to grow. Building materials. And especially with building materials, I want you to think about this. For any of you who may be sick, and especially those who are the most sick, we've actually found the most success if people have decided to move out of their homes, as our family did, in finding them a home that is pre-1960. And the reason for that is the pre-1960 homes have plaster walls. They have a harder wood framing than current framing materials are. And the harder the wood, the less microbial damage that can happen to those wood members in that home compared to a house that's built today. A house that's built today has wood that is very soft, has a lot of cellulosic material that's very easy for mold to digest. And so if for some reason there is water damage to that newer wood compared to the older wood, the mold will grow rapidly, whereas in the old wood it won't. Another noteworthy part about the plaster and that comparison to gypsum drywall of today, gypsum drywall tends to be or is acidic on the pH scale. Mold loves acidic things. It loves to grow on acidic things, and drywall has paper and fibers in it and is acidic. So mold is very happy, very content. Plaster, on the other hand, is alkaline on the pH scale, and mold will not grow on plaster. If you do see it growing on plaster, it may be because there is a residue of old wallpaper or there is a paint coating on it that the paint coating is actually allowing that to take place. Okay? So those are two primary pieces in the building materials, but there's also some plastics that can be a problem, and then some paints or some coatings that can be a problem, amongst other things. For all of my natural people out there, here's something that we learned the hard way in our own home. I got a great deal on wool carpet, and we had three of our boys on bunk bed system in our basement in the home that we ended up moving out of to fix. And I got a whale of a deal on some beautiful wool carpet. We had that installed, and it just felt so nice to be on, to lay on, to sit on, to walk on. And we had that in the basement there for a little while, not realizing that we had a water vapor transmission issue as well as some seepage issues. And these bunk beds had drawer systems in them. And when we finally got to a point of realization of where things could hide and reside as far as water damage and mold in our home, we inevitably got to that bedroom and we said, we have to move those bunk beds out and we need to inspect underneath that carpet. Well, when we went to move those bunk beds, the carpet, which was a lighter tan with a little orange tinge in it carpet, was absolutely black, the exact footprint of the drawer bases of the bunk bed system. So I put a natural carpet in our basement, thinking I was doing the right thing to take care of my family's health, because we'd made a transition after Lauren had had her tumor in 2002 to much more natural things. And that wool carpet was one of those pieces that got us to that goal. Well, little did I know that wool carpet, cotton carpet, silk carpet, all the natural fibers are an excellent food source for mold. Mold loves it. Mold grows on it. Mold thrives. And so by putting that wool carpet in my kids' basement bedroom, I actually was part of the cause of making them sick. So I need you to know that. Think about that. And we'll talk about in future podcasts, building materials, building methods, and things like that. We just don't have time today. Cardboard, paper, cloth, those things we find oftentimes stored in basements, in closets, at the floors of closets, where no air can get, where air circulation is at a minimum, and those can be a problem. Those are an easy food source for mold. Then we have a simple one. It's called food. Food and even gooey fingerprints from little kids or even regular adult people, and a lack of a clean home, a lack of good vacuuming and good quality vacuums, preferably a vacuum that has a HEPA rated system to it. We need to keep our food messes cleaned up. That includes everything, even up to fingerprints. You could have bank owned homes that you would walk into. These are probably the easiest way to see how this works out. In a lot of bank owned homes in our area, they are usually sitting for a year or two in the past. And if they get any kind of flooding in the basement because power was turned off and the sump pumps weren't working, that house inside relative humidity will rise above 60%. And that water vapor, which becomes a fuel for the mold, will allow mold to grow on any of the surfaces. And typically what we find is anything that is a high touch surface, from doorknobs to areas around doorknobs, toilet handles, cabinet doors and cabinet handles, countertops, sink handles, faucet handles, you name it, anywhere people have touched and left an oily fingerprint or have had a lot of skin cells shed even, which happens daily with any of us, mold will be growing in those places. Okay? So mold needs a food source. That's a whole bunch of them. Then we move on to an interesting item, which is the five senses. And I usually find most males tend to get this one a little bit twisted around. And we go back to the, can we see mold? And many males, if they can't see it, they don't believe it. And I'm going to pick on the males a little bit because I am one. And this was my problem. When we go back to the history of our family, my wife had kind of an intuitive feel that something was not right in the house. And not only did I fail to see it, but I failed to even take instruments to measure. And so seeing is not the best way to determine if you have a mold issue or not. Because if you can see the mold, you know you've got an issue. These are not the people we're talking to today. We're talking to the people who can figure out if their home has a mold problem or where it is. Okay, so we don't always see mold, and we've talked about that a lot. Smell. Well, we can smell mold sometimes, but there's oftentimes and most times in most homes that we find high mold counts, we don't actually smell the mold. And then we go to hearing. Can we hear mold? Well, I guess maybe some might claim that, but I've never been able to, so we'll skip over that one. And then we go to touch or feel. Obviously, if you see the mold, you could reach out and touch the mold. In fact, for anyone who doesn't know, there's kind of a running funny story in our industry, the restoration industry, at trainings, an often shown video of a professional, quote unquote, mold remediation professional in Chicago in the western suburbs who uses ozone, which we can talk about in another episode. Do not use ozone for mold remediation. He uses ozone for his mold remediation. He runs the ozone in this house that has water damage in the basement. Clearly, the walls have been wet. He failed to take those apart. He drilled small holes in the walls. There was visible mold on the walls. We could see it in the video. He could see it. He pointed it out as part of his training video. And he ozoned. And when the ozoning process was done to his satisfaction, he continued his video for his marketing. And he proceeded to tell people that the mold on the wall was now just simply dirt. And so he literally went down and he licked the wall to prove that he was correct. And so that is one of the funny ones in our industry that has been going around for some years now. Yeah, you can taste the mold. And I am sure at that moment that man tasted the mold. That was not the right way to do it. And I would not suggest that that's a good way to find mold in your home. Let's talk about measuring tools. This is what we find to be the great delineator between finding and not finding mold. In our world, we use tools to find the mold. Obviously, if you can see the mold, you probably don't even need to have us come or anyone who is an indoor environmental professional come to find your mold because you can see it. It's really common in bathrooms that don't have good ventilation, shows up on the ceilings. So in our world, there's a couple of things we use, and some of these you guys can use too. We'll cover these in future podcasts also. Hygrometers. These are instruments that measure relative humidity. The importance of these is at 60% relative humidity and above, sustained in a dark and quiet or a semi-dark and quiet area, mold will grow on any surface where it has landed or where there's food source for it. That is enough fuel, 60% relative humidity and above. So in various places, crawl spaces, basements, even inner wall cavities, people in our profession, we can place sensors in and we can measure, but even homeowners have all kinds of tools available to them right now where they can measure multiple places in their home and keep track of the relative humidity and the likelihood that mold could or may not grow. Thermometers, we're going to measure temperature. That you can link up with hygrometers and you can do measurements and calculations, and then you can come up with some hypotheses about could mold possibly grow in this one area or not. Then moisture meters. This is probably the single most important tool besides a flashlight that we would use for mold investigation. It's probably even more important to me than sampling methods because there's so many problems with sampling, and we'll talk about that in a future podcast. We have two main styles. We have a probe or pin style, and this is most often what I see homeowners buying because there's a bunch of social media groups and there's some doctor groups that tell them to go and buy a $17 or $27 or $67 pin style moisture meter, and it has two little metal pins that stick out and you poke it into or onto surfaces. And the problem with this is you can never measure deep enough in some of the wall assemblies or some of the assemblies of the home to actually know that inside or where the joints of these assemblies are, that it's actually wet or dry. A better method for doing this, but I also see the social media groups and the doctor groups recommending probably the wrong style, is the pinless style moisture meter, which actually kind of, it's almost like radar, that it sends signals into a building material and it calculates and it sends a signal back, and there's a resistance that is measured there that tells you if something is wet or not. We use a particular meter that measures 1 1/4 inches deep into building materials. Most people use meters that measure 3/4 inches deep. Okay. Then back to the probe and pin style, there are some where you can get longer pins, you can hammer those in, you can do different things. We'll talk about that a different day. But most people we're finding are buying the short pin, less expensive meters. And most people who are buying the pinless style also are buying a meter that measures about 3/4 inch deep. Thermal imaging helps. Oh, there's so much around thermal imaging that we need to talk about. So many people call thermal imagers mold meters or mold finders, and they're not that. So many people call them moisture meters, and they're actually not that. A thermal imaging camera gives you thermal information. It tells you temperature of surfaces. Now, coupled with a moisture meter, thermal imagers are a very fast way of finding water damage in a home or a building, but you must prove it out with a moisture meter. The thermal imager by itself will not tell you if it's wet or dry. It tells you the temperature. Particle counters. We probably won't go into that anytime soon, but particle counters can give you an indication of counts of particle sizes in the room, but it doesn't necessarily tell you what any of those particles are. Then we get into the sampling tools, vacuum pumps, petri dishes, lift tape, swabs, all kinds of different things that we can sample with. And we have oodles and oodles to talk about with sampling, and we'll do that. We'll talk about Ermi and Emma and Elisa, all these things that have been and now that are coming. And we'll talk about all the problems and then some of the good stuff that comes with that, but we do not have time today. Laboratories, obviously there's different kinds of analysis that are available from the labs, depending on what type of sampling tools or methods we use. Okay, so let's go on to number six. So we've covered mold has to be seen to be a problem. Water damage causes mold. Most people don't think about that. Mold has to have a food source in order for it to grow, as well as the water source. And then the fallacy that we can use our five senses to detect mold. Here we get into the really cool one, the sixth sense, the gut sense. When I do investigations, a key indicator to me is a client interview, and people are amazing. And the way that we are created is amazing. Our bodies will naturally avoid, in most cases, areas that make us sick. And when I walk through a home with people, they will sometimes avoid a room. They'll reach in and turn a light switch on and let me go into a room before them, or they won't even enter the room. And oftentimes that might be the room or is the room that has a mold issue in it. Their tone of voice will change. Their facial expressions will change. Their mood will change. All kinds of things. And I'll tell you, this was actually the first key indicator with the problem in my own home. And me being the really bright male that I am, ignored my wife and ignored the sixth sense that she had that something was wrong for probably a year. And it was actually at a point where she rearranged furniture in our room. And when she moved my nightstand, which at that time I had a CPAP machine that was drawing air there, there was actually visible mold growing on the wall right where my CPAP machine was drawing air in that I was breathing in. Then when we would sleep, I would exhale, and I'm sure she would get to breathe in whatever I exhaled. So the gut sense, the sixth sense, is super important. So if by chance we have anybody out there who is kind of thinking that's a weird thing, or that the person that you are with, your family member, a spouse, a child, and you think they're kind of crazy, I'm going to tell you, if they weren't known to be crazy in the past and they aren't crazy about other things, they're probably not crazy about this. They probably know exactly what they're talking about, and there's probably something wrong. So this is something that's important to understand. All right. So I want to summarize this. So there's a problem with some of these beliefs. Number one, mold is really, really small, you guys. It's really small. You can't see it. When you can see it, there are millions or billions of spores in front of your eyes. Water damage encompasses many more factors than we consider. There are so much related to water damage that is the cause for mold growth in homes. Mold has to have water. You have to consider all the possibilities of where water might have sat for too long to allow mold to grow. Clean and dry. This is going to be a theme of these podcasts. If we keep our homes and buildings clean and dry, I mean microbially clean, like we really clean our buildings and keep them clean, we'll have much healthier homes. We'll have much healthier lives. At this point, many people don't understand this concept of how to keep your house clean and dry. The five senses used for mold investigation are completely inadequate by themselves. A flashlight definitely does help, and there is some visual signs that we can see. Absolutely. When we smell things, if we smell a musty or a mold odor, that's mold, and you have a mold problem. Now you need to find it. So there are some pieces of the senses that work, but if we rely simply on we don't see mold someplace and we don't smell mold someplace, that we don't have mold, you may be correct. You might be correct. However, if you've got symptoms of illness, and if you've got somebody in the house that has a gut feeling that there's something wrong, then more investigation is needed and probably tools in order to gather the data. So that sixth sense, as important as it is, can also be subjective. And it can also be subjected to other influences, including social media groups, especially where people are claiming the sky is falling and you need to vacate, burn down, and burn up all of your contents. Those can adversely affect and subject our sixth sense to things that aren't real. However, and that being said, when we get to a point where we start sounding crazy without backing it up with some sort of data, the naysayers do come in at this point. And without the data, they will kind of brush off anything that is said. So that is, that's something to really think about, consider. And in both ways, that sixth sense can be really important. And so we just need to be wise about that. And we need to talk through some of those things. So this is really the end of what we are going to talk about today. And the question again is, how do I find mold in my house? I want you to replay this thing about six times because there's a ton of information. At a certain point here, we're going to have education that goes much, much deeper than this. And we'll have some items that are put together on paper that people will have access to. For now, I want you to come back through this and listen to this as many times as you need to. In the next episode, episode 3, we are going to answer some of the questions that were brought up today. We're going to talk about some of these false beliefs about how to find mold in the home, and we're going to talk about some of the solutions. We're going to go a little bit into the solutions and what the best ways are to find mold in your home. So I am so glad you guys tuned in today, and I look forward to being with you in episode number 3. Thanks. Thanks so much for listening to the Manage Mold Podcast. Do you have a question that you'd like me to answer raw and uncut on the podcast? All you need to do is head over to Apple Podcasts and do 3 simple things. Leave a rating and review telling me what you think of the podcast. In that review, ask anything you want related to your home's health. And if you want a shout out, leave your Instagram handle or name. That's all. Then listen in to hear your question answered live, raw, and uncut. This is Dean Malstead. Join us next time on Manage Mold.